太阳都在比较近的那些星球，我们从头在让这些内容都
对。In one of the sutras, the Buddha says, "Do not commit any negative deeds. Perform all the virtuous deeds, and completely discipline or calm your mind." And this is my teaching. So he is encouraging us to perform the virtuous deeds and not to do the negative deeds. We all want happiness and do not want suffering, and suffering arises from the forces and factors, and the main cause for such suffering is harming others. And all those activities that harm others are termed as negative, and suffering arises from such negative emotions. And since we do not want suffering, therefore you are advised to perform the actions. And since we all want happiness, we are encouraged to perform the deeds or virtuous deeds, because happiness and peace also arises from favorable forces and factors. And virtuous deeds are so called because even by performing such good deeds, you help other sentient beings, and as a result of that, you will experience happiness. And since we all want happiness, you must accumulate virtuous deeds. And in this way, generally speaking, in the case of those who do not know the causes of happiness and suffering, even in the case of those of us who have some idea that from virtuous deeds arises happiness and from non-virtuous deeds arises suffering, even after knowing that, it's extremely difficult for us to engage in virtuous deeds and to remove or shun the negative deeds. And this is primarily because our mind is not controlled or disciplined, and therefore Buddha is encouraging us to completely discipline our mind. And once you discipline, transform your mind, then naturally all your positive deeds will multiply and increase. And therefore it is extremely important to transform and discipline your mind. And the transformation and disciplining of the mind can be done by developing, on the one hand, a good heart in the form of compassion and altruism, and on the other hand, wisdom, understanding, or realizing emptiness. So these two practices are the most profound practice for transforming one's mind. And this is so because the main cause for having an undisciplined mind is ignorance. And the antidote to such an ignorance is self-grasping, and that which always stays with self-grasping is self-cherishing attitude. And this, in the case of the self-cherishing attitude, that which directly harms and that which directly acts as an antidote to self-cherishing attitude is the altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And this wish, desiring to help infinite sentient beings, is an extremely wise attitude. And therefore, by developing such an altruistic wish, that you can eliminate the self-cherishing attitude. And therefore, the ultimate method and the most important method to discipline one's mind is the twin practice of bodhicitta and the wisdom, understanding, emptiness. Therefore, we should make concerted effort to develop these minds and to further strengthen this mind. And right in the morning when we get up, we must develop our determination to try to leave some positive imprint in the practice of development of bodhicitta and wisdom, understanding, emptiness as much as possible. And whatever virtuous practices that you do physically, verbally, and mentally, this all should be directed towards developing the view of emptiness and development of bodhicitta. And so whatever virtuous practices and good deeds that you do in your daily life, as much as possible, try to let your mind direct it towards the development of these two minds, the view of emptiness and the bodhicitta. And if you undertake such a practice, then it is possible to develop such a realization on these two qualities in this very life. And even if you are unable to do so, then because of your repeated practice, repeated reflection and habituation, and then because of that, at the time of the death, you will be able to remember these positive qualities, and that in fact is the best way of transferring your mind from this life to the next life. And that is what has been instructed in the 7 points of mind training, where it says that you must cherish the instruction of development of altruism, which is the Mahayana practice of transferring one's mind. So much is dependent on how much you are habituated with your practice. For example, in the case of us, our mind normally gets directed towards afflictive emotions because we are habituated with that. And now, for example, if you are someone who is a bhikshu and who is very proud of his full ordination and so on, then because of this you repeatedly think that I'm a bhikshu, I received the ordination and so on, then even in the dream you will develop the feeling that you are a bhikshu and you will be able to develop such feelings. And probably when you are awake, when you develop certain view of emptiness and understanding of bodhicitta, when you are awake, and then because of this if you are able to remember this even when you are sleeping, then probably those experiences during the state of dream may be probably more effective, because during the state of dreaming you do not have many other destructive conceptual thoughts. So in this way, if you get habituated with these such practices, then finally at the time of the death there is every hope that you will be able to recall these positive qualities. And when we die, we go to the most subtle state of the mind, and then gradually the mind becomes gross and we transfer into the intermediary state. And because of this ups and downs and changes of the mind, it may be difficult to continue with the same habit. However, these practices will definitely leave an impact. For example, we do see some people having some children with different habits. Even children from the same family, you do see some different habits with these children. Some of them are right from the childhood very fond of trampling on insects and killing insects, whereas some are very reluctant to do that. And how these different tendencies among the children from the same family came about, to some extent you might try to relate it to some biological or physical state, but it will be difficult to give a thorough explanation simply from the biological state. So even in our case, if you have strong habituation with the virtuous practices, it will be quite helpful. And for example, in the case of sometimes when we are just a little child, we may have some positive good habits, but when we grow up and get influenced with certain ways of thinking, certain ways of life and certain environment, sometimes instead of becoming better, we become worse. And in certain cases, we may be quite naughty or quite unruly when we were a kind of child, but gradually when we grow up, because of some positive environment, we find that we are able to change our mind. So what is really important is to understand the process of transforming and changing the mind, and to sincerely practice it. Without such understanding, even if you claim yourself as a Buddhist practitioner and continue to go on receiving so many teachings and continue to go on receiving so many initiations, and particularly visualizing some wrathful deities like the blood-drinking wrathful deities, then without such man practices, it is possible that you might even born as a wrathful spirit, which instead of being able to help others, might become a unruly spirit that harms others. And therefore there's this statement that even if you undertake so many recitations, you might be born as a Rudra, a wrathful spirit that harms others. And at the time of the previous Sekhung Rinpoche, there was a monk from the Upper Tantric College, and in fact later on people give him a nickname saying Lama Yamaraja. Yamaraja is the name of Yamintaka, and since he was fond of reciting the mantra of Yamaraja, and he later on got the nickname Yamaraja Lama. Even when they do Guha Samaja self-generation practice with others, he would do it, and then later on when it comes to reciting the mantra, he would immediately switch on to Yamaraja. And he was very fond of reciting that mantra, and because of this wrathful practice, it influenced his mind and behavior so much that even my junior tutor, Tejar Rinpoche, told me that he met this monk, and in the beginning particularly, even his eye was kind of quite frightening, and if he could gaze at a dog, the dog would be very scared and would run away. And later on he met Sergung Rinpoche. Sergung Dorje Chang met him, and Sergung Dorje Chang advised him that what is more important for you is to meditate on bodhicitta, and particularly the common preliminary practices, because you are reciting too much of these wrathful mantras. And then later on he became very disciplined, and so this is something that actually happened. So devoid of such fundamental and common practices, it will be very difficult to drive any benefit. And then we have this story of Domtomba. And at the time of, I think it was Domtomba, he saw someone moving, circumambulating around the temple. And then Domtomba asked that person, "It is good that you are going around the temple, but it will be better if you do Dharma practice." And then he felt that it will be better to recite some mantra, and he started reciting mantra. And then again Domtomba advised him that it is good that you are reciting mantra, but it is better to perform some Dharma practice. And then he started reading some scriptures, and then again Domtomba said, "It is good that you are reading scriptures, but it is better to good Dharma practice." And he got totally confused and asked him, "How should I do my Dharma practice?" And he said, then Domtomba advised him, "Give up clinging to this life." So without removing the clinging towards this life, without undertaking the Dharma practice through your mind, we are unable to undertake a proper Dharma practice. So Dharma must be done by the mind, and as and when we undertake Dharma practice with the employment of engage of our mind, it will be a genuine Dharma practice. And with regard to Dharma practices through your speech or through your physical activities, these are not very sure whether they would become virtuous practice or not. For example, you may be going around the temple and verbally reciting some mantras, but still your mind can be infested with countless varieties of discursive thoughts. And particularly if your mind is getting distracted and thinking about everything, normally you do not get tired. And when you actually focus on the actual meditation, then you easily get tired. That means you are really involving yourself. Whereas sometimes we go around the temple several times, but talking about the world, about the latest situation and so on. And so when your mind is involved in all these non-virtuous things, then because your mind is not really involved in the virtuous practices, you do not get tired. And you enjoy such practices, but in fact these are not genuine practices. And similarly is the case that you can recite certain mantras. Now on the other hand, if you are mentally engaged in positive practices like meditating on loving kindness, compassion and so on, and at that very point when your mind is engaging or meditating on those virtuous practices, at that time there is no opportunity to develop attachment, hatred and so on. So doing Dharma practice by the mind is real Dharma practice. And without involving the mind, the physical and verbal virtuous practices are not a guarantee that they would become genuine practices. And it may be, of course, the physical and verbal virtuous practices may have some benefit, but still it may not become the real or genuine Dharma practice. And in order to discipline and transform the mind, you must know the methods and the techniques. And so at this point, we are studying the mind turning like the rays of the sun and the excellent text of Bodhicharyavatara. So we will first read from, continue from the mind turning like the rays of the sun. And the second point discusses about how to practice by reflecting on the advantages and benefits of cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings. And the root text of the mind training, the 7-point mind training, says that one should meditate on the kindness of all. And in general, in the case of a person possessing the Mahayana lineage, as he said in the Madhyamika Avatara, loving kindness and compassion are said to be extremely important in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. And these qualities you are able to develop in relation to sentient beings, because by seeing how sentient beings are derived of happiness, you develop loving kindness. And by seeing how much they are suffering, you develop loving kindness, as is said in the Bodhicharyavatara. And not only that, the bodhicitta, which is preceded by loving kindness and compassion, also arises by in relation to sentient beings. And because you develop bodhicitta by thinking that it is only the state of enlightenment by which you are able to fulfill all the needs and purposes of sentient beings, and by which you are able to eliminate all the sufferings and harms of sentient beings. And motivated and provoked by loving kindness and compassion, you are able to develop such an altruistic wish, desiring to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, as is said in the ornament of realization. And similarly, other practices like the 4 ways of gathering disciples and the 6 practices of the 6 perfections, they all arise in relation to sentient beings, and you are able to develop these qualities and enhance these qualities in relation to sentient beings. And in fact, all the host of causes for actualizing enlightenment, all these arise in relation to the sentient beings. And for example, when we talk about undertaking, say, 10 virtuous practices, they can all arise in relation to sentient beings. For example, in the case of non-killing, non-stealing, and refraining from sexual misconduct, and similarly not telling lie, not engaging in divisive talk, not using harsh speech, and not engaging in idle gossip. And all this arises in relation to sentient beings, and therefore all the causes that are responsible for actualizing higher state of life, like the life of a human being or a god, are possible in relation to sentient beings.
And similarly, in this, in the case of the development of the path that leads to liberation, the primary parts are the practice of the three trainings, that is morality, one-pointed meditation, and wisdom, understanding emptiness. And out of these three trainings are also possible in relation to certain beings. And out of these three, the most important is the ethical discipline or the morality, which is really like the ground. And you can observe all these moral disciplines in relation to certain beings. And even in this life, the name, the good name that you get, the food and clothing that you get, all comes from other friends, certain beings. Whether it is the house where you live, it is difficult for you alone just to construct a house. You need to invite masons and carpenters and so on. If you think about all the materials of a house, like the irons that you use and the bricks that you use, and all these are dependent on the kindness of many other sentient beings. So it is through the labor and contribution of many people that you are able to construct a nice house. And particularly today, when we talk about modern economy, we can't make a distinction between the Easterners and Westerners. And it is through the effort and work of many countries, many places, and many people that we get all these facilities. And similarly, think about different types of vegetables and grains. These are the result of many farmers. And then if you think about meat and flesh, this directly comes from the body of animals. So you can clearly see that particularly eating meat and flesh is, of course, too much. And in order to make your life survive, you take the life of others. And so therefore, selling meat or killing animals is extremely bad. And particularly in the case of some of these major business ventures or corporates who run poultry and who sell beefs and so on, they take countless lives of animals, and we are eating the body of other animals. And as I said, during the Kala Chakra in Bodh Gaya, and again we are totally deceived by the appearance and the reality. And we are deceived in the sense that when a meat is really cooked and placed on your table, at that time the meat really appears beautiful and nice and delicious and smells good. And at that time you get the impression that this is another kind of vegetable. And it is very difficult for our, and before the meat is being cooked, if your raw meat is placed on your plate, you feel slightly uncomfortable. But and particularly if you again take a kind of flesh which of an animal which is just killed, and then you feel very uncomfortable. And if you actually observe the flesh being taken from the body of the animal, and then you feel very uncomfortable. And the animal who in a very innocent way just going around, you suddenly kill that and then use the meat. It's very unfortunate. And of course, when we go to a restaurant and vegetable and enjoy the meat, we really enjoy them without any thinking. And then in the case of Tibetans, we are very fond of drinking buttered tea. And in my case, of course, it has been for a long time. I almost had given up drinking Tibetan tea. And then in particularly in the case of elderly monks, they are very fond of drinking thick buttered tea. And think about the tea, how they come to your room. Particularly when we are in Tibet, the tea used to be brought from places like Tharsindo and so on, which is very far from certain places in Tibet. And in those days, we don't have any kind of modern means of communication, so they were all brought about on the back of yaks. And sometimes I was told that the yaks are so heavy loaded that they even kind of break their backbones. And so it is in this way that we make our life survive. And you can now easily see, just to make your life survive, how much disturbance and problem you have created on others. Now, after bringing so much disturbance and uneasiness to others, you made your life meaningful. You made your life survive. And what is the purpose of making this body survive? Having made your life survived, it is important to make your life meaningful. And of course, I am not saying that everything that you have earned from other people, you have done to exploit it. And I'm not saying that. But what I'm all saying is that directly or indirectly, we are related to the help, contribution, and kindness of others. And this being the case, it is important to make your life to be of some benefit to others. And even if you are unable to benefit others, make sure that do not harm others. And then look at the name and the fame. Name and fame grows by telling about your certain qualities from one person to the other and so on. It is through such circulation of the words that you become famous and that you earn your name. And today, the name and fame of a person is circulated through newspapers or through radio. And if nobody listens to radio, nobody reads newspapers, it is not possible for you to become famous. And it's because of newspapers and radios that your name and fame is circulated. And one person shares it to other, and then other person gets amazed with those achievements. And in this way, you become famous. So whether it is the house, nice house that you live, the food that you eat, the clothing that you wear, and the drinks that you use, all this are due to kindness of other sentient beings. And then these days, even in terms of water, you need to pay for them. And some of my friends who came from Tibet, when they hear that you need to pay some money for a bottle of water or something, they get completely astonished. How come that we need to pay money for water? And then think about the beginning of your life. Your life, again, is due to the kindness and love of your mother. And right from the beginning when you were born, you were almost like a tiny insect. And you're totally helpless. And at that very beginning state, if the mother neglects you, even for 24 hours without taking care, probably you'll not be able to survive. And it is even said that by nature, the nutrition that you get from the milk of the mother cannot be compared with any other food. So this is how you are nourished by the love and kindness of your mother or other sentient beings. So when you reflect in this way, then you will be able to find that everything good or success or name and fame that you have achieved today is due to kindness of your sentient beings. And you are expecting to get a better life in the future. That is also possible due to the kindness of other sentient beings. And if you engage in a virtuous practice to achieve new one through the practice of the three trainings, like morality, meditation, and wisdom, and particularly when you engage in the practice or development of loving kindness and compassion, all these are possible due to the kindness of other sentient beings. Now here you might think that yes, I did get a lot of benefit from other people, but they were not free. I paid money for my clothing, for my food, and so on. You might think in that way, but that is totally wrong. To receive the benefit from something else, it is not necessary that the others should have a motivation to benefit you. Take the example of the liberation or true cessation of sufferings. The liberation has no motivation to benefit you, but as and when you achieve liberation, you get benefited. and therefore you appreciate such qualities. And having achieved enlightenment, you are able to develop spontaneous and effortless activity to benefit other sentient beings. And this also arises in relation to sentient beings. And in short, the root cause of all the causes and effects of Mahayana are due to cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings. And it is because of this, Shantideva in his Bodhicharyavatara says that even when you look at other sentient beings, you should see them by thinking that it is in relation to these sentient beings that I will achieve enlightenment. And with that kind of understanding, with an honest and loving mind, you should look at others. And also, if you have a very fertile ground, then in that very fertile ground, if you plant a fresh seed, and then if you look after it, giving water and so on, then you will be able to get good crops. So it is because of this you take special care of the ground, the earth where you're going to plant the seeds. Similarly, sentient beings are like that ground where you plant the positive qualities like loving kindness, compassion. And it is in that ground you develop qualities like love, compassion, six perfections, the four ways of gathering disciples. And if you nourish these qualities, then you will be able to perfect the twin purposes of yourself and of other sentient beings. And it is through this way that you achieve enlightenment, and therefore you should also highly respect, cherish and regard the field of sentient beings. And it is in this context, the Shantideva in his Bodhicharyavatara says that this field of sentient beings and the field of Buddhas, they are equal to you in terms of receiving the benefit. And it is by respecting and pleasing these countless sentient beings that you achieve such a perfect state. And since such a state of enlightenment is achieved both through the kindness of sentient beings and the guidance of enlightened beings, why is it that you pay respect to the Buddhas and not to the sentient beings? And from one point of view, sentient beings are even more kind of kind and more beneficial. As I said, all the temporary achievements of food, clothing and so on, of course this may be a kind of product of your virtuous deeds in the past, but many of these factors are sentient beings. And so the perfections that you have in this life and the perfections that you achieve in the future life and the perfection of enlightenment that you achieve, all these are due to the kindness of sentient beings. And even though this is the case, but in our case, when we think about Buddha, we show much respect and devotion and faith, but when we think about the other sentient beings, we totally ignore them, disregard them. Not only we totally ignore and disregard them, but we exploit them. And so therefore here Shantideva says, why is it that you ignore and disregard these sentient beings who have been so kind to you and show only respect to the Buddhas? And of course here we are not talking in terms of the level of qualifications and qualities, and in that case of course Buddhas have definitely more qualities. And in this way you should see sentient beings as the cause of the Buddha. and also the qualities of the Buddha. And therefore it is extremely worthwhile to respect the sentient beings. It is by cherishing and loving the sentient beings and by benefiting them that you achieve higher state of life and liberation, enlightenment, and so on. And by ignoring and disregarding the state of existence that we see in the world and all the positive rest of life that we see in the world and the actualizes objects and undesirable objects. These are result of either having benefited sentient beings or harmed sentient beings. By relying on sentient beings, one is able to actualize even the unsurpassing state of enlightenment. So whether it is the enjoyment of a god or a human being or the state of Brahma and so on, all these are result of having helped sentient beings. And on the other hand, all the sufferings like being born in a hell or born as an animal, born as a hungry ghost, and the many types of sufferings that the sentient beings experience, these arise by harming other sentient beings. And it is by making others suffer with hunger or thirst, or it is by beating and belaboring other sentient beings that you experience suffering. Now, on the other hand, when you are unable to think about the benefit of infinite sentient beings, and by disregarding the sentient beings, you actualize only temporary state of enlightenment, like the state of Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. And in the case of a follower of Mahayana, because of his or her vast and extended mental scope, and because of cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings, they are able to actualize the unsurpassing supreme enlightenment. Because in the case of the first, they are unable to develop a mental scope where they are able to help the countless sentient beings. And therefore, not to have kind of attachment to sentient beings. Now here attachment in the sense of compassion. So without having that kind of attachment to sentient beings should be given up or eliminated like a poison. And it is because of the fact that the Sarvakas are without attachment to the sentient beings that they actualize the inferior types of enlightenment, because of not giving out the well-being of all sentient beings. The completely enlightened Buddha has achieved such a state of omniscience. And so therefore, if we use the English language, then in the case of self-cherishing attitude and the self-grasping attitude, this is the time to say goodbye to them. And from beginningless time until now, we have taken refuge to self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping attitude. And so what is the result now? Well, see our own plight right now. Are we happier? Have we achieved permanent state of happiness? We haven't. This clearly shows something went wrong. Until now, you submitted everything to the self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping. You have wholeheartedly entrusted to them and you have achieved nothing. So this is now time to take refuge somewhere else. And since self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping attitude is the source of destruction, and therefore now is the time to develop our mind, cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings, and to develop our wisdom that sees the lack of existence of such a self. And of course we do not have a genuine experience, but it is important to make an effort so that our mind becomes slightly closer or approaches slightly closer towards a mind that cherishes the well-being of other sentient beings, and that views the self as having no inherent existence. And because of such attitude, even if you are unable to transform misfortune into the path, but when misfortune arises, you will have less fear, and you will be able to face them. And that much I can say with my own experience. In my own life, I experienced much ups and downs in my life, but relatively I can say that my mind is quite relaxed, and I am quite a happy person. And as you will know, that I am a happier person, not because I had fun in my life, or I go around making fun. And it is, I think, because of the practice of bodhicitta that it directly helps our life. And when you think about selflessness, it may not be able to help you directly, but it leaves its force or impact on your mind. And of course, we may not be able to develop these qualities as has been explained in the text, but at least if you direct your mind towards these positive qualities, this will definitely transform your mind. Now, even with such small attempts, if you are able to see such results, then imagine what will be the result if you are able to develop genuine realizations. There is this story of a thief who went to steal wine from a family, and in the darkness of the night, the thief went quietly, and he, from the top of the pot, he took a little sip, and he was so excited, and he enjoyed it so much, and then he said, and even with little sip from the top of the pot, if it tastes so good, it definitely will be much more tastier in the bottom. And then he started drinking more, and he started singing and shouting. He got intoxicated, and then the owner of that wine knew that what was going on, and he was caught. So what I'm trying to say is that even with this kind of little effort, if we are able to develop so much happiness and so much relaxed attitude, even with little expression and appreciation towards bodhicitta and view of emptiness, if you are able to bring about so much transformation, there definitely will be a wonderful experience if you are able to develop these qualities. And similarly, if you read about the common and uncommon special qualities and achievements of these great masters, we are able to develop some conviction about the possibilities of such experiences. So it is important to reflect on these points. And these sentient beings that appear to you, and that appears to you as humming to you, these present sentient beings appear to you as if they are a kind of enemies and so on. It is primarily due to one's own having accumulated negative emotions in the past, and our own negative emotions that we have performed in the past has acted as a substantial cause. Now, even in the case of these enemies, now particularly in the case of, say, the Chinese, or who are today termed as enemies for us. Now, if we reflect carefully on them, there are more reasons to develop more compassion towards them. because in their case they do not have much understanding about the destructiveness of afflict emotions, and they make a clear cut distinction between oneself and others, and they undertake the so called class struggle, and the classless class struggle. And a class struggle can be made only when you make a clear distinction between who is on your side, who is on the side of others. And based on this distinction, you make the struggle influenced by afflictive emotion, and then bring about so much destruction. And not only that, you can see throughout the world how much destructions and conflicts are bring about by not knowing the faults and shortcomings of the mind. And people normally remain totally oblivious of the need to cultivate positive qualities of the mind and the need to remove the shortcomings and the faults of the mind. So therefore, even in the case of the so-called enemies or those that appear to you as being harmful to you, they appear to you as an harmful being primarily because of the substantial cause that you have accumulated by yourself in the form of afflictive emotions. Now, in the case of these sentient beings, they themselves have a lot of afflictive emotions. So these afflictive emotions act as a substantial cause. And in our own case, we also have harmed others, and those harmful actions act as our cooperative condition. And it is because of this today the enemies or the harmful beings with bad motivation they engage in wrong actions. And so this is really like you can't produce a sound without clapping two hands. It is partly due to the negative deeds and afflictive emotions of others, and partly due to your own negative actions and emotions that you have accumulated in the past. So many of the problems that we see today or we encounter today, one of the main factors is within oneself. And so therefore this state of endless wandering within the samsara, and particularly the countless types of suffering that we experience in the form of various lives, these are primarily rooted to some extent to one's own cause, as is said by Aryadeva, where he says that motivated by your own action or instigated by your own action, all these harming or harmful actions or harmful experiences arise. And it is because of this sentient beings go to the hell. So in one sense, you are responsible for their destruction. And particularly in our own case, when we have entered into the door of the Mahayana practice, they bring about many types of harms and interrupt your Mahayana practice. And it is because of this and when you see this, you should develop special compassion, thinking that it is because of such actions that we suffer in general within the samsara, and particularly suffer after being born in the negative state of existence. And that is why in the case of those people who bring so much destruction and harm to the Tibetans, there also we have more reason to feel more compassion to those that bring about harm to the Tibetans. Now in our case as the Tibetans, we are experiencing the result of sufferings that experiencing the sufferings which is the result of negative actions that we might have committed in the past. Now in the case of those that are torturing us, those that are harming us, they are right now accumulating the cause for future sufferings. So from the point of view of development of compassion, and in our case we are experiencing suffering and as a result of our past lives, bad negative deeds. And once we experience this suffering, that closes one chapter, then of course if we continue to accumulate negative actions, we will continue to suffer. Now if we do not do that, even if others harm us, instead of retaliating, if we are able to develop loving kindness and compassion, then we are at a situation when we purify our negative deeds. Whereas in the case of others, they have started accumulating the causes and factors for negative actions, like destroying temples, images, and so on. These are kind of very serious kind of negative deeds and crimes, and similarly defaming the teaching of the Buddha. Very recently, I met just few days back, I met a very senior monk from Mongolia. One was in his early 80s, and there was another senior one. He was 96 years old, so they came to see me a few days back, and he told me that when he was around 9 or 10 years old, he was living in that big monastery, Thakuri, or today in the place called Ulaanbaatar. So he was in that monastery. So when he entered that monastery around when he was 9 or 10, and so when he was around his around 30s, so the communist revolution started around the end of the 1920s. So they actually started the main destruction after a few years. So at that time, he told me there were 13,000 monks in his monastery, and then within these few years, he said more than 10,000 monks were killed. And then the next remaining few thousands, they were asked to do different works, and they were able to survive, and he was one of them. And at that time, he told me there were around 800 geshis. Geshis are like the doctor of divinity, who had achieved the highest degree in their Buddhist philosophical studies. So, and then in our case, in the case of the Tibetans, around 56, 57, and so on, 58, so on. The disturbance started in the lower part of Tibet and also Amdo. And many lamas and geshis whose sole practice was meditation on loving kindness and compassion, and many of them were killed, which is extremely unfortunate. And the one who were killed, they were meditating on loving kindness and compassion for all sentient beings. And these people, they are without any reason, they were killed. So these people who did such a negative deed out of ignorance and who committed such heinous crimes, they are really the object of compassion. And when people ask me the question, saying that, are you not angry towards the Chinese who committed so much atrocities? And I answer them by saying that I do not get angry. They get quite surprised. And I do not get angry because, as I said, there is more reason to develop compassion towards these people who have started accumulating so much negative deeds. And in our case, as I said, we are purifying our negative deeds. And of course, generally speaking, of course, there are so many different karmas. In the case of some karmas, so in your individual case, of course, there may be so many different karmas whose fruits you may have to experience.
Shayang nesin di, ajamajala, tangi nishin.
And not only that, this person or this group of persons who are harming me today, they have acted as my mother countless times in the past lives. And not only that, in the form of different lives, I might have ate your flesh and meat, drank your blood, gnawed your bones, and wore your skin, and sucked the milk. And if I put all this together, even the three realms, 3,000 realms of the world will be too small to fill this up. And similarly, I might have killed you and beaten you and robbed and snatched from you. And so this is the time that you have every right to get it paid from me. And you have every right. So when somebody does something wrong to you, you should simply invite them, in the sense that there is every right for you to do this to me. And you should even be grateful. And with special visualization and focus, you should develop loving kindness and compassion towards the ascended beings through the practice of giving and receiving, and particularly in relation to those that are harming you. Develop patience and forbearance, and it is in this way that you are able to undertake the practice of the six perfections in relation to these ascended beings. And of course, there will be a detailed explanation on this point in the Bodhicharyavatara. And if there is practice of patience, then before that the practice of giving and morality has already preceded. So these three definitely comes in relation to the rest of the sentient beings. So in short, they are really, these sentient beings are really are those that will offer the enlightenment in your hand. And therefore, the great master Chekhovachemba said that whether sentient beings are your enemies or your friends, those sentient beings who act as an object of arisal of afflictive emotions, and whoever is able to see them as a spiritual friend, such a person will have peace and happiness wherever they live and wherever they abide. And just as when your abbots and preceptors grant upon you ordination or vow, then you see them with great kindness, thinking that this will become the cause for achieving liberation and enlightenment. And likewise, in relation to these sentient beings, you are able to complete your practice of patience, and that becomes the cause for achieving enlightenment. So therefore, when the mouth gets something to eat, the tongue should not throw that away or push that away. And similarly, in the Bodhicharyavatara, it says that if someone says something unpleasant about you, or harms you, or mocks at you, you should pray that all this become a cause for achieving enlightenment. And similarly, the great master Chekhovachemba says that and even when you have benefited others, but they repay that kindness with harm, again you should repay it with the meditation on great compassion. So the supreme beings in the world, they would repay the wrong deeds of others with good deeds. And if you are able to train in this way, then you will be able to lead a life which is similar to the in the Tibetan saying, which says that if you are really a brave person, then you can find weapon everywhere in the ground. And there is another Tibetan saying which says that if you are visiting a continent full of precious jewels, then you will not find even a stone to throw at the dogs. So that means there's no you will always be able to undertake the mind training practice, and therefore if you have such a practice, then it doesn't matter what name you call to it, whether you call it the training of bodhicitta or not, you are engaging in the bodhicitta practice. And that is why the great master Langri Thangpa has said that bodhicitta is the mother of production of all the Buddhas of the three times. And similarly he had said that bodhicitta arises in relation to the sentient beings, and therefore why you feel so unhappy in relation to the sentient beings. So he is saying that the achievement of enlightenment is possible only in relation to sentient beings. But in our case, unfortunately, we always feel and think that either this person is making mistake or that person is doing the wrong thing and so on. And in this way, we always feel unhappy, similar in the case of a person who always complains about his helmet, because he doesn't know how to wear the helmet, but always complains that something is wrong with this helmet. So this is almost like saying that you are unhappy with the process of enlightenment. And with regard to the benefits and advantages of cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings and the faults of self-cherishing attitude, Shantideva summarizes in his Bodhicharitamrita by saying that there is no need for me to elaborate in detail. You can simply compare the child or ordinary people who always works for his benefit and the Buddha who has always worked for the benefit of other sentient beings. If you compare these two them and see the difference, you will be able to understand that. So in this way, we should see the self-cherishing attitude as the source of all the faults, and the mind cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings as the source of all the qualities. And it is in this way you will be able to see the sentient beings who are the object of your benefits as something very pleasant and dear to your own heart. And it is through such an understanding now you should change the course of your reflection thinking. Until now you have always thought about yourself, you have always cherished about yourself, and you have ignored about others' well-being. Now you should change that. Cherish and regard others' purpose as more important than your own purpose. Your purpose may be very important, but comparing to other sentient beings, your own purpose is nothing, whether it is in terms of number of other sentient beings or in terms of the kindness that they have done to you. There's every reason to develop more cherishing attitude towards others. Now, this does not mean that you should totally forget your purposes. Now, when you are actually training the mind, then of course, in the teaching of Thoyun Lama, in the end, when he is dedicating the virtue, and he finally dedicates the work of his composition of the text by saying that through the power of this virtue, may I never achieve enlightenment, and may all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. So this, I think, is a result of training too much in the self-cherishing. He was able to clearly see the destructiveness of self-cherishing attitude and the great advantages of cherishing the mind of other sentient beings. And as we use the English word, through such training, your mind really become highly moved. And then there is another master who had said at the time of the when he was about to die, who was a great practitioner of the bodhicitta, and then when he was about to die, he expressed some concern by saying that now something is going wrong. And then one of his attendants, he was surprised, and he felt what was he wondered what was going wrong with his lama, who has been practicing bodhicitta for so long, and why is it that he's developing so much anxiety. And then asked him, what is the concern, what is the reason that you get worried? And then the lama said, I have always prayed for being born in the hell so that others be liberated, and now I see the sign of being born in the pure land, so this is not a good sign. So in this way, when you exchange your well-being to the sufferings of others, you practice a kind of equality or equanimity, and this kind of equanimity is different from the one that we have discussed earlier. And here we are developing equanimity in the sense of benefiting all other sentient beings without any difference, as is explained in the Guru Yoga, where it says that in terms of not wanting the smallest suffering, and you know, in terms of aspiring to have the maximum happiness, there is no difference between me and others. Therefore, may I be able to develop joy and happiness in the mind of other sentient beings. And all sentient beings, all of us, all sentient beings are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And we are also same in having the right to have happiness and having the right to remove suffering. And under such a circumstance, the only difference is that in my case, however important I may be, I'm just one single individual, one single person, whereas in the case of others, they are just infinite. And even in an ordinary case, it is worthwhile to sacrifice a small cause or small number of people in the case of the majority. So this is the way of the wise. Even when you do a business, and there is in fact a saying which says that by destroying 100 you invite 1,000. So that means even when we do a business, you sacrifice a few hundreds of rupees so that you are able to get the profit of a few thousands of rupees. So depending upon the extent of the benefit, and if you are going to achieve something important, then even if you had to undertake certain temporary hardships, you will be happily able to enter into it. And since the number of sentient beings are infinite, like the limit of the space, and therefore it is worthwhile to be able to tolerate it, then also in terms of your relation with the rest of the sentient beings, it is in relation, you are directly related to the rest of the sentient beings. It is not that your happiness and suffering and happiness or sufferings of others are very much related to you. So other sentient beings are not like trees. And if for the sake of this tree, if you sacrifice your life, then I think it is quite stupid. But so we are not talking about sacrifice yourself to something else where you have no connection at all. But in the case of the rest of the sentient beings, your very survival, your very existence is very much dependent on them. Then how could you therefore ignore them and destroy them? Even if you think about your own purpose and benefit, the best way of actualizing and achieving your benefit is taking care of others' well-being and happiness. And therefore, since everybody wants happiness, do not want suffering, and having the right to have happiness, and having the right to remove suffering, and since all sentient beings, including oneself, have the potential to actualize the enlightenment, all of us have the Buddha nature, that we should take care of everybody, And particularly when you compare yourself with others, because of their number and so on, you should sacrifice or pay less regard to yourself. And particularly in the case of when you are actually training the mind, you pay less regard to yourself and pay more attention to others and pay more attention to cherishing the well-being of other certain beings. And from that perspective, you show less regard to yourself. But what you are actually trying to do is to actualize enlightenment, Buddhahood, for yourself. And if you achieve such a state of enlightenment where you have eliminated all the negative emotions and faults, where you have actualized all the positive qualities, then that is the best way of fulfilling your purpose. Here, when we talk about showing less regard and respect to yourself, we are not totally, we are not asking to totally sacrifice yourself, and we are not saying that you should suffer all the time for the benefit of other sentient beings. And particularly when we talk about undertaking the practice of transforming the misfortune into the path, sometimes people do feel that one should all the time suffer. And also there is a mind-tending practice where it says that it's better to suffer than to be happy, because if you suffer, when you suffer, then at that time there will be less opportunity to experience afflictive emotions. And when you are happy and when you are successful, then you develop all types of afflictive emotions, like exploiting others, developing jealousy, competitiveness, and so on. So this is actually the process of training the mind. But in real sense, in actual sense, and in fact, when we say that it is better not to have happiness but to have suffering, because if there is suffering, you will remember spiritual practice. So what we are saying is that if you are able to experience suffering, you will be able to enter into Dharma practice, and which will lead to long-term peace and happiness. So if you don't understand this in the right perspective, you might develop some misconception. And if it is the, when we talk about sacrificing oneself for the benefit of other sentient beings, if all we are talking about is to bring self destruction and so on, there is no need to undertake such a practice. We should simply continue the practice of taking a self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping attitude, as we have been doing in the past so many lives. In that case, it is definite that you will suffer, and you will suffer terribly. And therefore, I also say that actually we are absolutely foolish. We are foolish in the sense, because we always think that I should deceive this person, that person, exploit this one and that one, and therefore fulfill my best purposes. And in this way, you suffer, because you lose your friend and so on. And whereas in the case of the Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, they are really remarkably intelligent, because they talk about helping others, and they do help others, and through that way they get the best level of happiness in the form of becoming a Bodhicitta and Bodhisattva and becoming enlightened. So we read from the Bodhicharya Avatara. Number 15 of the first chapter, verse number 15 from the Bodhicharya Avatara. So until to this point, we have been discussing about the benefits and advantages of practice of Bodhicitta. And having seen the benefits, you should stage by stage train the mind as we have been reading from the mind changing like the rays of the sun. So remember those, and then there is the process of training the mind through the seven cause effect instruction, and through the practice of exchanging one's happiness for the sufferings of other sentient beings. And as we discussed earlier, we should first of all cultivate all sentient beings as something very cultivate the mind of seeing all sentient beings as something very close and dear to our minds, and then you are able to develop a very powerful loving kindness and compassion, where you are able to see everybody as something very close and attractive to your mind. And likewise, a person who has a good understanding of the three levels of suffering, suffering of suffering, suffering of change, and conditioned suffering, and when you are able to see the destructive state of being influenced by afflictive emotions, then you are able to develop a strong compassion, wishing that all sentient beings be free from suffering. And likewise, you are able to develop loving kindness, wishing that all meet with happiness. And particularly, you are able to develop what is known as the great compassion, that is the capacity to induce special attitude, a strong sense of responsibility to commit oneself to benefit others. So such a great compassion as a wholehearted commitment to help others, where one longs to help others day and night, one wholeheartedly longs to help others. Now, how could one really help other beings? How could one really be able to help other sentient beings and fulfill their purposes? At this ordinary state of, at this ordinary unenlightened state, or as an ordinary being, it is not possible to help all other sentient beings. And in fact, here your commitment is so strong that you are saying that if I have few people willing to come with me, I will help other sentient beings. And if I have to go alone, I will not help them. This is it is not this kind of determination. Here you are saying that I myself will go forward, I myself will move forward and help other sentient beings. So this is really like a commitment similar to a mother that has to her only beloved child. And when that mother has only one child to whom she has so much love and affection, and if suddenly this child falls sick, then whether the mother is sleeping or going or sitting, she would always be concerned and worried about her ailing child. So we should have similar kind of feeling towards the sufferings of the infinite mother sentient beings. You should develop a strong concern, how should I help them? So try to develop such a mind as much as possible, and such a great compassion then can induce a special attitude, and a special attitude has that very strong commitment, aspiring to help all sentient beings and help remove their suffering and the cause of suffering. And when such a person instills his mind with such strong resolution and commitment, such a person never gets discouraged, never develops any fear with hindrances and obstructions, and such a person never gets strongly aggravated or disturbed. Of course, there may be small irritations here and there, but there will be no strong mental disturbance and aggravations, because such a person has seen the whole cosmology, the whole universe as one's friends. And such a person therefore will always enjoy everlasting peace and happiness. Now, in terms of actually working for the benefit of other sentient beings, one should know the technique. The actual process of helping other sentient beings is helping them discipline and transform their own mind, and it is through making the sentient beings individually transform, discipline their mind, that they can ensure to have long-term happiness and remove suffering. And apart from that, there's no way that you can offer positive qualities as a gift. And in fact, even when we undertake the practice of giving and receiving, it is done only in the level of visualization, and it is not possible to actually and directly confer or grant all your qualities and happinesses to others. And of course, exceptions are there. Sometimes if there is a special karmic connection with ascendant being, with some powerful bodhisattvas, then in certain cases it is possible to actually receive, share the sufferings of others and so on. But generally speaking, the sufferings that one has accumulated as a result of one's own karma, one has to experience that, one has to share that. So therefore, not only in terms of visualization, but it is through actual teaching and showing the path, what is to be adopted and what is to be given up, by showing such a path that one can help others. And particularly if you are able to show the path based on your own experience, then you will be able to show the right and correct path. And if you do not have any personal experience, but you make a correct, as you make some assumption of the path, then it will be very difficult to give much help. So this is like a teacher from the primary school trying to teach university or college students. So in the case of students in university or college, they should be taught by a scholar, a professor who has more qualification than the students, and they cannot be taught by those people who have less knowledge of the subject. Similarly, in the case of bodhisattvas, when they help others by showing the path, they should do so by having developed experience by oneself. The path that one is going to show to others should be based on one's own experience. Because when we guide others based on, when we guide others in terms of spiritual practice, then it has to be done through one's own experience. So it is different from imparting an academic education. We are not teaching history or mathematics. So on the one hand, you really be qualified, you should have the knowledge as well as the experience. Now secondly, even if you have the knowledge and the experience, it is important that what you are going to teach to others should be understood by others, because here you are not making a display of your knowledge, and the purpose of giving such a teaching is to be of benefit to others. And when Buddha gives the teaching, he was not making a display of his qualification and knowledge. If the whole purpose of Buddha's teaching is to make a show of his teachings, then he should not have taught the three wheels of the doctrine, but he should have given only the middle wheel of the doctrine, which is the ultimate thought of the teaching. But he gave three levels of teaching who are seemingly contradicted to each other. And particularly in terms of tantric teaching, if he was making a show of his knowledge or qualification, then he should have given only the Anuttara Yoga Tantra teaching, the highest Yoga Tantra teaching, and not the three lower classes of tantric teachings. But he did give all the three classes of tantric teachings, and similarly he turned the three wheel of the doctrine, because his whole purpose of giving the teaching was not to make a show of his teaching or his knowledge, but his whole purpose was to benefit others. And in order to benefit others, he should give a teaching which is relevant to the needs and mental dispositions of others. And if it is not suitable to others, then it is of no use. And right from the beginning, when we came into exile, and we were having... And in the very beginning, when we came into exile, I was trying to encourage our Tibetan people and the staffs, and I told them that we should be creative, that we should be able to think, we should be able to speak, and we should be able to do. And then there was another staff whose name was Gadang, and he said, yes, these three qualities are necessary, but we should add another quality, which is we should also see whether it is beneficial to others or not. So I totally agree with what he said. So in the case of the bodhisattvas and Buddhas, they were able to think, of course, they were able to speak, and they were able to do. But what is even more important for them was to be able to see, whether what he is going to give, what he is going to teach, will be beneficial to others or not, relevant to others or not. And that is why in the teachings of Durga we have two levels of teaching, the interpretative teaching and the ultimate teaching. And the interpretative levels of teachings are given so that such teachings are of benefit to those people whose minds are not receptive, whose minds are not ready to listen to the ultimate level of the teaching. So therefore, even if you have this wonderful altruistic wish to help others, but unless you achieve enlightenment, you will not be able to help them. And in order to help others, afflictive emotions create a big obstruction. But what is even more obstructive is the hindrance to achieving enlightenment. So these bodhisattvas who are committed to help other beings, they are not stupid people, they are very intelligent. And therefore they are able to see that in order to really help others, I must remove not only afflictive emotions, but also the obstruction to enlightenment. And therefore, when we talk about generating bodhicitta, bodhicitta is generated with two aspirations. The aspiration to fulfill the purposes of other sentient beings, and the aspiration to achieve enlightenment by oneself to be able to benefit other sentient beings. And in fact, if there is a choice to, there is a possibility to remove the obstruction to enlightenment without removing the afflictive emotions, then I would say that the bodhisattvas will rush towards removing the obstruction to enlightenment rather than removing the obstruction to liberation. But however, the obstructions to enlightenment are imprints that are left behind by the afflictive emotions. So therefore, without first removing the afflictive emotions, there is no way to remove the obstruction to enlightenment. So therefore, normally when we talk about obstruction to enlightenment, they are the imprints and seeds of afflictive emotions. So it's really like the smell that you experience even after having removed, say onions or others from a pot. Even after removing that object, still you can see the smell. So the imprints that are obstruction to enlightenment are like this smells. So unless you achieve a state which is total cessation of the two obstructions to liberation and enlightenment, it is not possible to actualize omniscience. And so therefore, even though your purpose is to help others, but in order to help others, it is not possible to help them without actualizing Buddhahood and enlightenment. So that is actually the meaning of bodhicitta. And such a way of thinking arises because in reality, the reality is such that unless you achieve such a state of enlightenment, there is no way you can help them. Now, with regard to such a bodhicitta, there are so many different types. These are explained in the text. The bodhicitta can be explained, classified in terms of examples, in terms of their support, and in terms of their nature. So here the division is in terms of their nature. To summarize the different types of bodhicitta, there are two aspects, two types of bodhicitta: the aspirational, the aspiring bodhicitta, and the engaging bodhicitta. Aspiring bodhicitta is an altruistic wish aspiring to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. Engaging bodhicitta refers to that state of bodhicitta where you have not only aspired to achieve such a state, but you are actually engaging in the ways of life of bodhisattva through the practice of the six perfections and so on. The second one is called engaging bodhicitta, because you are actually engaging in the ways of life of a bodhisattva. And these two types of bodhicitta, the aspirational, aspiring bodhicitta and the engaging bodhicitta, are explained with an example, just as you are able to know the difference between the wish to go and the actual going. Similarly, the wise ones should know the difference between these two. For example, first of all, you may have a wish to either go to Dharamsala, or you have a wish that I will go to Bodh Gaya. So this mere wish, so there is one level where you have only the wish to go to Bodh Gaya and Dharamsala. And then there is a second level, motivated by that motivation, and that you take the rucksack behind and you actually start moving towards Bodh Gaya when you are actually going. So even at that time, the wish to go is there, and at the same time you are actually going towards Bodh Gaya. So depending upon whether these two, the wish to go and the actual going, are differentiated in terms of whether they are actually influenced by actual action or not. So similarly, we can distinguish these two minds, the aspiring bodhicitta and the engaging bodhicitta. And among the thoughts of many Indian scholars, there are different modes of explanation in terms of how you would make a demarcation between aspiring bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. And this explanation conforms to the explanation found in Kamala Shila Stages of Meditation. Now, out of these two kinds of mind, in the case of aspiring bodhicitta, verse number 17, even if you develop the aspirational bodhicitta, it has great merit. And so the text reads, from the aspiring bodhicitta, even when you are within the samsara, there will be great fruit, there will be great merit, but it will not accrue continuous merit as is the case with the engaging bodhicitta. Because if you make a commitment to actually lead the ways of life of bodhisattva, and then actually live or lead the ways of bodhisattva, then there will be continuous development of merit. So such is not there in the case of aspirational bodhicitta. And verse number 18 explains the benefits of engaging bodhicitta. And from the time when you have developed engaging bodhicitta, as and when you develop such irreversible mind, willing to liberate all sentient beings, and when you adopt or when you develop such a mind, and from that time onwards, whether you sleep or whether you remain careless, the force of your merit will continuously grow, similar to the extent of the space. So such a bodhisattva who has such an engaging bodhisattva vow, even when that bodhisattva remains careless, like being intoxicated or being sleeping, because of one's earlier motivation, one will be able to develop continuous merit because of the force of one's earlier motivation. And this engaging bodhicitta is called unchanging mind, because you have developed a wish to help sentient beings until you achieve enlightenment. And having made such a commitment, when you make such a commitment, you are saying that I will never give up this mind. So therefore it is called unchanging mind. And from that time onwards, you will develop endless merit. Now this will be proved with two first citing quotations and then using reasons. And this is very, this is explained with reasons in the question of the Subahu Sutra. And the purpose of giving such a teaching is to help those that are inclined to lesser paths, lesser vehicles, for the benefit of, in order to, when the merits and advantages of such a body, engaging Bodhisattva vow is taught to those that are inclined to lesser paths, they will be benefited. And therefore, by giving of that lesser path, lesser vehicle, the Buddha gave this teaching of the Mahayana. And not only this is taught in the scriptures, there are also reasons. For example, even when you think that I will remove the headache of certain beings, this is recognized as a very beneficial mind, and that will definitely have infinite merits. So this is saying that when you think about removing just one illness like headache, there are so many illnesses, so many sufferings. Out of these so many sufferings and illnesses, even if you develop the wish to remove the, remove just one illness, the headache of somebody, even that is recognized as very beneficial, and you accumulate immeasurable merits and qualities, as is the story, as is the story of the daughter of Zahu. In one of the life stories of the Buddha, there is this story. So in that life story, there is a long story. There is no need to tell me that long story. Anyway, he was planning to go. He was going for a long distance for business, because his father used to go to long distance in a jeweled land, in the land of jewel, to do the business. And therefore he said, I will follow my father's story. But the mother was reluctant, because his her wife, her husband, or the child's father had lost his life, and therefore the mother advised the child not to go. And then he did not listen, and he kicked on the head of the mother and left the mother and went to business. And it is because of this he experienced many, while experiencing the result of many of the positive deeds that he had done earlier, he developed more desire to go to more distant places. And then finally he entered into a very dark, terrifying room, and in the center of that room he found someone sitting on a throne. And there he saw a person whose, on his head, there was an iron wheel moving all the time, throwing the brains all around. And when he, out of curiosity, he asked, what's happening here? And then he was told that in one of his lives, he did not listen to his mother's instruction and kicked on the head of his mother, and this is the result. So on hearing this, he also felt that I will probably will suffer in the same way, because I accumulated the same merit. And as soon as he realized that the will that was moving on the head of the other person suddenly moved on his head, and he had to experience the same result. And as soon as he experienced that, he felt that just as I'm experiencing suffering in this way right now, there may be so many others who will be suffering. So may I be able to receive receive their sufferings upon me. So undertook the practice of giving and receiving. And as soon as he reflected in this way, the wheel flew into the space, and he was able to get rid of the suffering. So this is the story of removing the headache. Now, if this is the case, then what need is there to talk about the immeasurable merit that you will earn when you develop a wish to remove the uneasiness or unhappiness of each and every individual, and thereby to transform all this uneasiness of each and every individual into immeasurable qualities. So, meaning that so this means when you meditate on love and compassion, you should start from friends or those that live around you. And then once you are able to develop loving kindness and compassion towards these people that are around you, with whom you relate, and then you can, if you are able to achieve good practice in that, then you can extend that practice to others. But unfortunately, in our case, we do not live harmoniously with those people that are around us, and then we talk about all sentient beings somewhere out in the space. So if you are really talking about the benefit of all sentient beings, then what is really important is to start from those people that are living around you, with whom you are associating, meditate love and compassion to these people. And then, like these people, you should meditate on all other sentient beings. So therefore, visualize on a particular individual as your friend, relatives, or as your enemy. And then undertake the meditation in depth with regard to that person, and then you can gradually extend that same process of meditation, and you can develop a wish to benefit all of them. So therefore, on the one hand, here you are trying to remove the uneasiness and unhappiness of each and every individual, and you also aspire that not only that all these sentient beings are without all types of sufferings, but they should also be without any types of shortcomings and faults. And not only you have this wish to remove each and every of their sufferings and shortcomings, but you also have this wish to transform their sufferings, unhappinesses and shortcomings into immeasurable qualities. So the merit of such bodhicitta is incalculable. Now even when we do a prayer, if you make a strong prayer thinking, if you make a prayer just for yourself, aspiring that I should have long life, that I should have happiness, that I should have success and so on, it is not sure whether that will be achieved or not. And even if there is a benefit, the benefit is very limited. Now, on the other hand, if you make a short prayer, or even if you burn just one butter lamp, and if you do so by with the motivation that made this become a cause to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. Even though you are doing the same prayer, you may be burning the same butter lamp, but because of the force of the motivation, there will be great difference in terms of the fruit. And likewise, from a negative point of view, if you think that I will kill just this person, then the result of that will be less kind of destructive. On the other hand, if you make a determination and a strong motivation thinking that I will eliminate all of these people, then that negative action is much more strong, of course. So even though you may look very great, like an army general with all the stars and smart uniforms, but with that kind of motivation, you are committing a very strong negative deed. Now, likewise, if our whole family asks somebody to kill a chicken so that they can all enjoy, then even though you are killing one chicken, all of these individual members of the family, they will have the negative deed of killing one chicken each. So these are dependent on, much is dependent on your motivation. So when you have this great courage and spirit to remove all the sufferings of all the individuals and to make them meet with all types of happiness, and then the result is tremendous. And such a wonderful thought will be not there even with your parents. Nobody has such a beneficial mind. Such a beneficial mind is not found in the mind of the gods or in the great sages or in the Brahma. Normally we regard our parents as very compassionate, the source of compassion. They do not have such a mind. And similarly, such a mind is not found in the powerful gods and also not in the mind of the sages who are supposed to have renounced this life